Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peep State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peep State Pandemonium.
Good evening, good evening, good evening, and welcome to Peep State Pandemonium. We are back from our summer hiatus. Do they run reruns while we're off the air? And if so, do we get residuals from that?
I don't know, but I can use it.
We're back after a three-week layoff for the holidays and everything. Hope you guys had wonderful holidays. I know Bobby did because he was blessed with my presence for a couple weeks. So he had a wonderful holiday.
Yeah. All the grocery stores here were very pleased you were up here.
Well, what do you do, run a bed and breakfast up there, buddy?
Well, when he's in town, I do.
I know who to bribe in his family. And it ain't him. Oh, man. Oh,
listen,
but anyway,
after the Christmas gift he gave my wife, he'll always have a place to stay here.
Really?
Jeez. My wife is into this Walking Dead, that show on TV. Excuse me. Got choked up thinking about it. He gave her the second season in Blu-ray, but it was packaged inside a skull, a zombie skull, and it had a screwdriver through its eye. And she sat here all Christmas Day with that screwdriver in her hand, poking that thing in the eye and looking at me. So I'm not sure what that meant. But it has found a prominent place to set up, and every once in a while she'll go by and stick it in the eye with that screwdriver. So
sounds like you're on borrowed time.
Well, I figure so.
You might want to stop the insurance payments.
If I'm found dead and there's a screwdriver involved, somebody please call the police.
Oh, me. What about you, Mr. Oaks? How were your holidays?
They were good. They were excellent. Had a lot of time off and, you know, just I enjoyed it.
Good.
How about you?
Good. Mine was great. I got to spend time with my daughter and Bobby and Debbie, and I attended church 3 weeks in a row, which is hard for me to do, traveling as much as I do, but I really enjoyed it. I miss Atlanta every time I'm up there. I miss it even more when I pack up to leave. But hopefully things will work out one day, and I'll be at home again in Atlanta. But
when do you head out?
Sometime in March. I'm sure I'll get the word sometime in March, and probably start in the Carolinas somewhere. So hopefully I'll know something shortly after the Mobile reunion. If I had my way, I would do the Mobile reunion and follow Bobby and Charlie and all of them as far as Atlanta on Monday, and then go on to where I'm going. But it probably won't happen that quick. Since our last show, and I said this when we did our last show, since our last show was our memorial show for those we lost in 2012, that it never fails that whenever we do one of those shows, we usually lose a couple more. Well, this year it was really bad. We lost five after we did that show between that show and last week. We lost Rip Hawk, who Bobby and Jerry, I know you worked with.
No, I never met Rip.
Oh, really? He wasn't there in the Carolinas when you were there?
No, Ted had met him. I never met Rip Hawk. I never did.
It was a great worker, from what I understand. I never got to see much of him work, but was a good booker up there for the Crockett's for several years. We also lost a gentleman named Al Mandel. Al was a referee off and on for, Lord, I guess he was involved in the business, what, probably 70 years?
Oh, yeah,
like that.
Long time.
Big-time member of the Cauliflower Alley, was on the board of directors
board
of the Cauliflower
director,
Alley.
Yeah.
And a nice gentleman. He came to Mobile a few times, and a very nice gentleman. And then we lost Argentina Zuma and Luigi Massera on the same day, the 29th of December. And, of course, on the 28th, we lost our friend and the gentleman who we are doing this show tonight for, Big Bill Gromo, which was that was a tough one. That was a tough one. You guys knew him much better than I did, but I've known Bill through the reunions and everything. He was still doing, he would every once in a while come to Atlanta TV when I was doing Atlanta TV, mainly in tag matches where somebody else would drop the fall, but he was there a handful of times when I was there, and it always thrilled me because he was one of those people who I always associated with Georgia. Even though he was from Canada and traveled quite a bit early in his career, he found a home in Georgia in the early 60s and pretty much stayed there. He would go off to Tennessee every once in a while, go down to Florida, did tours of Japan and Australia, but Georgia was always his home. And so tonight, what we've got lined up are some of the people, besides the two of you, who I'm sure have plenty of Bill Gromo stories, but we have also lined up some people that have worked with him, our friend Gene Lavelle. Gene worked with Gromo very early in Gene's career. One of the first early matches Gene worked was in a tag match with Bill as his partner, so he's going to tell us all about that. And his time around Bill, when Bill would venture up to Tennessee. Jody Hamilton of the Assassins is also going to join us, as is Bob Armstrong and probably Bill's closest friend, Danny Miller. They're all going to join us. And also, I just got word this afternoon, Tanya Matthews, who is one of Bill's three daughters, and hopefully Karen, Bill's wife, will be joining us also somewhere along the line. So it's going to be a great show, I think. I just want us to just, you know, tell Gromo stories and laugh and use that as our way of remembering our friend and paying tribute to him, because he was, like I said, everybody's got a Bill Gromo story, and they usually end up with somebody besides Gromo getting hurt.
That's a fact.
So I'm going to take a quick commercial break, and when we get back on the air, we'll get Gene Lavelle on the line with us. So hang on, and we'll be right back.
Wrestling fans, Anarchy Wrestling television tapings are the second and fourth Saturdays of every month at 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. For more information on Anarchy Wrestling and on the shows, to watch the television product and a whole lot more, go to anarchy-wrestling.net. That's Anarchy Wrestling, the second and fourth Saturdays of every month in Cornelia, Georgia.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, we got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie?
can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first party you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Music in the background just reminded me of something. Somebody sent me a DVD of Deep South somewhere along the line. I don't know what year it was from. I don't remember when Jody was running Deep South, but Freddie Miller, and that music is what reminded me of. It reminded me of Freddie Miller. Freddie was doing part of the play-by-play along with Rock Hunter on the first part of it. The opening match, or the first match that was on the disc, was Continental Heavyweight Champion Randy Rose defending his title against a gentleman I'd never heard of before named Jerry Oakes. And Jerry, you were robbed. You should have been champion.
I thought so, but we don't need to go into that.
Do you even remember that match?
No.
I told Steve Lawler, I saw him last week, and I asked Steve, I asked him, I said, and do you remember the first time we ever met? And he goes, I was working for Jody, and I said, yeah. I said, Jody called me and wanted me to come referee for him, and I don't even remember where it was, some school somewhere. And I said, the first night I met you, I said, you wrestled Jerry Oates. And I don't even remember what year it was or where it was. That was the first time I ever met Steve Lawler.
Jody had a good little thing going on.
Yes, he did.
He had a good crew, very good crew. It was Ranger Ross's first territory. A lot of guys on that Jerry, I'll have to make you a copy of it. Bobby, too, if you want. Besides you and Randy, Two's on there. Tommy Rich is on there. Ranger Ross. Of course, Ted Allen, Billy Starr's the Nightmares. And they brought in Ken Wayne and Danny Davis as the Unmasked Nightmares. They had a Nightmares versus Nightmares. In fact, they had two of them. Nick Patrick was doing the ring announcing and doing the commentary along with Joe Pedicino and Rock Hunter. Jody worked on there as the Flame and as the Assassin. Don Sanders, Greg Brown, Thomas Ivey are all on there.
Hell, if these guys had had some good training, they'd have been all right.
They could have gone places, couldn't they, Bobby?
I'm going to tell you something, Jerry Oates. That I may have told you this. I saw Thomas Ivey and Greg Brown at Brad Armstrong's funeral. If I had passed Greg Ivey on the street, I would have walked by him and not know who he was until he spoke to me and got in my face.
You talking about Thomas?
Thomas Ivey. He's lost three whole people, son.
You know, I hadn't seen Thomas since he lost all that weight.
Son, I bet he don't weigh. He probably goes about 150, 175, maybe.
That's hard to believe.
He used to be. I mean, you know, he's a big old boy.
He was.
But he walked up to me. Him and Greg walked up there, and he says, "You don't know who I am, do you?" And I went, "Well." And then he got in my face, and I really saw who he was. I mean, I hugged him. I said, "Man, what happened to you?" He said, "Well, you know, just a lot of hard work. That and good drugs, you know, it'll do it, I guess." I don't know. He told me, he said he just quit eating. But he's. I mean, you wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, Greg told me how. I talked to Thomas about 3 weeks ago. He calls me maybe a couple times a month.
Good guy.
Yeah.
Good guy.
Well, guys, I'm going to get our first guest on the line. The Tennessee Flash, Mr. Gene Lavelle, otherwise known as Burrhead Bennett. Gene, how are you doing this evening, sir?
Doing very well. How are y'all doing?
Doing wonderful.
Doing wonderful.
Well, you all know something about Mr. Dromo?
Yes, sir.
Well, I got the pleasure of meeting him. And, well, I met him before then, but I had the pleasure of working with him in Tennessee and working tag team with him and working against him. And he'd rather work with him as a tag team than I had to work against him.
I can understand that.
You still get tatered, but it was less often.
Well, when you get close to him in the corner somewhere and then you want to tag in, he kind of slap you a little hard on the back or something or other. But the first time we ran wrestled tag team with him in Knoxville against the Green Brothers, and we changed the name of Knoxville to Tater City.
Oh, geez.
I thought there was some pressure in that match.
I had a bush or two for him.
Now, Bill mainly worked East Tennessee. He didn't work much Nashville over that way, did he? Didn't he mainly work
in Nashville? Yeah, we worked in Nashville.
Really?
He worked in Memphis. He worked the Birmingham territory. Yeah, worked it all.
I'd love to have been a fly on the wall first time Nick Goulas tried to stiff him on
takeoff. Yeah. Y'all, I think repeat what he told Nick when Nick told him he's gonna have to wrestle Jordan and put him over.
I bet that wasn't pressure.
He never did work with Jordan.
He was lucky.
Well, Nick knows what would happen to him if he did. Bill would have stretched him all over the ring, plus tired him everywhere.
I'm sure. Now, God, I didn't realize until Bill's passing, and I'm ashamed to say that I didn't know more about Bill's career than I did. I didn't realize that Bill had such an extensive amateur background. Did you guys know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he was one of the top-ranked amateurs in Western Canada, with him being from Winnipeg originally, and the only person he ever lost a match to in that region was Gordon Nelson, who we also just lost a few weeks ago. So that's not too bad. The only person that could beat you was Gordon Nelson. You're doing pretty good.
You know, Bill was a Sabisco at one time, don't you?
He was a what?
He went to Bill. He went to Sabisco. Yeah.
Yeah, he worked up there for Senior McMahon.
Yeah.
And supposedly the New York office got a call from Stanislaus Sabisco and said, was complaining about who was this using our name.
And, yeah, that's what I heard.
And McMahon just pretty much put him in his place, and then after... many years after Bill was gone from up there, they brought along Larry Whistler and named him Larry Zabisco, I guess, is another. Well, by that time, both of the original Zabiscos were gone anyway, and their real name wasn't Zabisco anyway, so I don't know what they had to complain about. I can't pronounce what their real name was. It was Zagagmu or something like that, but so Zabisco wasn't even their real name, so they had nothing to complain about.
You're talking about Bill's amateur background. I didn't know how much it was, but I had the pleasure of experiencing it one night. I was working with him, and Charlie Smith was refereeing, and we locked up, and he shot behind me, and next thing I knew, I was on the mat, and he was riding me like a pony. And I would try to move and set out and move, and he would give me just enough leeway to blow myself up. And finally, I worked myself to the ropes and grabbed the rope, and Charlie went down there, and he tapped him on the back. And I looked up at Charlie, and I said, "Would you please tell Bill Gotch that this is a work and to get off of me?"
I seen him take both his fingers and poke a guy in the eye one night, and the guy never did show up in the territory no more than I know of. I had him. I had Bill over the ropes, working against him, pulling him down, you know. choking him and stuff, and every time I'd pull him down, he'd poke that guy in the eyes.
That was your tag team partner.
Yeah, sometimes he got the guy between his legs and his head out towards me outside the ring, and he was poking him in the eye every time I'd pull on him. So I just kept pulling on him.
Jerry, did you ever wrestle, Grandma?
No. Partners with him.
Chicken.
What's that?
I said chicken. He don't know what a tater was, does he?
Like I say, when you partners with him, you get tatered, but it's, you know, it's not as often.
He used to potato me just dressing next to him in the dressing room.
Oh yeah,
be in the ring. Good Lord!
Listen, you know, he got very active. You know, after he got out of he quit the business. He got very active in the Shriners, and he was the provost officer, marshal, major. I'm not sure what the titles are. But he was over, like, the security portion of the Shriners. Like, whenever the Shrine Circus was in town, he would be over the assigning the, you know, the Shriners, the security post, and so on and so forth. But anyway, we was up there, we were standing in the cemetery the other day, and this guy come up to me, and he said, I just wanted to, you know, he said, you did a nice job. I said, well, I appreciate it. And he said, look. He said, I didn't know him as long as you did, but, you know, you mentioned him hitting you and stuff. And I said, yeah. I said, we beat on each other pretty good. He said he walked up behind him when he first met him, and he said he hit me right between the shoulder blades in the back. He said, and it popped like a firecracker. He said, but it didn't hurt. He said he didn't hit me that hard. He just cupped his hand. It made a lot of noise. And he said, people thought he'd kill me. And I looked at him, and I said, buddy, I said, he was good to you. He liked you. And I said, let me ask you this. I said, did he ever do this to you? And I went behind him, and I took my hand and run it around, and I grabbed the guy by the breast. And he goes, oh, my God. He said, he grabbed me one time, and he said, I told him, please don't pull my heart out. I said, he was, you know, he thought he was being funny, man. He'd kill you. You know, Jerry's mentioned over here, I know he did it to Jerry. He'd tie your clothes in knots.
Oh, yeah.
I thought I'd have to leave naked a lot of nights.
Oh. You know how the dressing rooms at the Columbus Auditorium were, you know, there was an opening that went into the shower, but there was no door there, and then there was like three shower heads on either side. It was just a big room built onto the locker room. And, you know, I'd be in there, you know, sometimes he was in the main event in Fred's Towns, but most of the time he was on semifinal or, you know, third or fourth on the card, and I'd have to referee. So I'd be in there taking a shower, and, you know, he was always a hurry up, let's go, we got to go, you know. And you've never just had the pure joy of being standing in the shower and him hollering at you going, here, catch. And, your reaction is to catch whatever he throws at you. And you're standing there under the shower, and you look down, and you're holding your underwear.
Your clothes or your shoes or something.
Yeah, everything. You know, you're just there getting, you know. I mean, it was, you just never knew. And he was just such a nice guy. You couldn't help but like him. You know, sometimes you'd want to kill him, but that was, you know, that was just par for the course. And he had that laugh. He'd just laugh at you. Oh well.
I tell you something, he was a man's man.
Yes, he was. He was that. Loved his hunting and his fishing.
Yeah.
And Bobby and Charlie have told me several trips, and Jerry, I'm sure this happened to you too, going somewhere and going along seeing Bill's truck pulled off the side of the road, him down in a culver somewhere fishing.
Oh, I used to go to Waycross. It's a long stretch after you get off 75 to go to Waycross.
Emphasize the long part of that stretch.
Yeah, I just blow the horn and keep going, man. He'd be down in there. He enjoyed. I mean, he enjoyed his trips. And
in November of 74, when Barnett hired me, for the first 19 weeks I worked for Barnett, I made Waycross every Monday night. And
you know, all those fans down there loved him, Bobby. They took him hunting. And
oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, he had more hunting trips than
there was
boar and
probably,
you know,
17 of those 19 weeks he was there. We rode together. And you know, he'd drive 1 week and I'd drive 1 week. He would always tell me, though, he'd say, we need to leave about an hour early. And I'd go, why? He said, just be there. And I went, okay. And we would leave. And what I found out was there was a guy down there, somewhere down there right off of 82, that road that stretch across there. He was running a turkey chute. And we would go down there and we would spend an hour to turkey chute. And it was like $5 a shot, you know, to get in the thing. But I was on the rifle team in high school. I've always been a pretty good shot. And you were shooting shotguns. And you were, I don't know how far the target was. But there was very few weeks me and him left there that me or him won or both of us didn't have a side of bacon or a 10-pound box of ham or something, you know. But, I mean, we'd leave an hour early where he'd go shoot the guns.
He knew all the stops. I'm telling you, he fished every stream and creek. And
he had a guy in Waverly Hall. Remember the restaurant there, Clarence's Back 40?
Oh yes, I do.
All right, going south, just past that on the right, the house is still there. There's a little white house that's just off the road there, and there's two little lakes right beside it. You probably passed it and seen it a million times.
He fished them both dry, didn't he?
Well, the guy there, his name was Mr. Bridges. And his lakes got taken over by turtles. So we would stop at that Clarence's sometimes to get a cup of coffee. Well, Bill had met this guy years before, and the guy told Bill, he said, man, I need to get them turtles out there. And Bill said, well, shoot them. He said, they have to come up for air. He said, shoot them. And the guy said, well, come by there and show me how. So we would leave early to go to Columbus where he could stop, and we would sit on the bank for about 30 minutes. And he would shoot turtles. The guy was furnishing the guns and the ammunition, and all he had to do was sit there and shoot.
That's right up his alley.
Absolutely loved it. I told this story at his funeral the other day. Right after they passed the law here and opened up a bear season in North Georgia, evidently they had too many of them were, you know, coming out in the public. They had to thin the herd or whatever you call it. And he called me, and he goes, hey, let's go bear hunting. And my answer was one word, and it was very short, and it was very terse. I went, no. And he and I think I shocked him. He goes, no. He says, why won't you go with me? I said, well, with mine and your luck, we'd find one. So I said, you know, they not bothering me. I'm just going to stay right here in Atlanta. So I never went bear hunting with him.
He loved the hunt.
Yes, he did.
We'll have to get Karen, if she gets on with us, we'll have to get her to tell the story about him bringing home a live turkey.
Oh, geez.
Bobby, did you tell Jerry about him getting in the last word at his funeral?
When I got to the funeral home last Wednesday night, Jerry, Miss Karen was standing there in the middle of the floor, and she hugged my neck, and she, of course, she was crying, and I was crying, and it was a pretty bad scene. But we walked up to the coffin, and Bill had been so sick, and I know it's a cliche, and I know that you know, you hear it's really morbid to say it, but Bill looked better than I had seen Bill look in a long time. There was no more pain on his face. He didn't have to struggle for breath anymore. They did a wonderful job with him. But she told me, I got to show you something. Bill's left hand was almost clenched in a fist where he had been so sick and the Parkinson's had taken over. It stayed that way almost all the time. The right hand had drawn up so bad, the fingers had, that she said, I had to cover this up. And when she pulled the little cover back and I looked, Bill's hand was laying there and Bill was shooting a bird. And she looks at me and she goes, my Billy's still trying to get the last word in.
That's him.
That was it.
And that other hand. man clenched in a fist. Somebody was getting a tater the minute he stepped out. I told Bobby, I said, several people had brought things to put in the casket. Scrappy has coins, a very special coin that he gives out to certain people, and he had put one in there. And I told Bobby, I said, I wish I'd have thought about it. I'd have stopped by Kroger and picked up a tater to put in there. I said, half the people here wouldn't understood what that meant, but those that didn't would appreciate it.
Oh.
You know, him and Mr. Maury, I might be duking it out, I reckon.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Gosh. Rocket told me.
Can you imagine what those two would have been like?
Rocket told me they were in a tag match at the Auditorium in Atlanta. Bill and might have been Armstrong, I don't know, against Sputnik and Rocket. And Sputnik, Bill and Rocket were in the ring and they were exchanging punches. And they were laying them in, buddy. They were just absolutely smacking each other. And Rocket said he reached over and tagged Sputsy, and he said before Sputsy would come in the ring, he said, "Hey, this ain't that crazy kid coming in there now. This is Sputsy. Let's loosen up a little bit." Sounds just like him.
Well, Gene, you got any other stories for us? Otherwise, I'm going to give Mr. Hamilton a call and get him on, but you're welcome to stay on the line with us.
I'll just go listen on the computer, sir.
All right.
Have a good night.
Well, I appreciate you joining us. Thank you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Gene, thanks for calling, man.
Yeah, let's have some room for somebody else, because I don't get a heart and won't be able to talk in a few minutes.
it sounds like you got the croup.
I've been that way for a while. I don't know what's going on. I've been to the doctor. I just get that way sometimes.
Spend too much time in Alabama. That's what it is.
I'm not down there no more, sir.
I know.
Golden Globe.
Finally
man,
catching up with you.
Have a good night.
You too, Gene. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Well, let me try and give Jody a call and get him on with us.
If you would like to make and receive calls anywhere in the United States absolutely free, simply visit MagicJack.com and begin making calls for free. It takes only seconds. That's MagicJack.com. The Magic Jack number you've called has not yet been assigned to a customer. Please check the number you've dialed and dial again. If you would like to make and receive calls anywhere,
playing Magic Jack commercials here. I know this number works. I doubt it. I talked to Jody earlier on it.
I knew you would get money out of this one way or the other.
Yeah.
You can set it in, Bobby.
Yeah, I mean, he's the only one getting a check.
I was smart enough.
Yeah, that was his home number I gave you.
Yeah, I talked to him earlier this evening. So, well, now I've got the switchboard up, and I'm not showing any of us on there. Oh, there we all are. All right, well, let me try them again. If this doesn't work, I'll call Billy Wicks. Maybe he's got it. He can tell it to me on the air.
Nothing wrong with that.
Oh, man, the thing is I can't see this thing when it's not lit up where I can see the number. So hang on just a second. I try and pride myself in being efficient in all this technical stuff. But
if you would like to make and receive calls anywhere in the United States, absolutely free, simply visit MagicJack.com and begin making calls for free. It takes only seconds. That's MagicJack.com. The Magic Jack number you've called has not yet been assigned to a customer. Please check.
Bobby, you're on your cell phone, aren't you?
No, sir. I'm on the house phone.
Can you can you do two-way calling?
Well,
you don't have his number in front of you, do you?
No.
All right. Well, because evidently this switchboard is not going to work on his phone. If he's using magic, maybe it's because he's got Magic Jack. I don't know. But
oh.
Tell you what I'm going to do.
It's a 770 number, isn't it?
Huh?
Is it 678
or 770? It's a 770
number.
Yeah. I said it's a number I called earlier.
Yeah,
today.
It's
Hang on, let me check my maybe I wrote it down wrong when I wrote it down. Hang on, bear with me just a second. I'm gonna mute my phone. You guys carry on, and then I'll be back in just a second.
Bobby, what was you getting ready to say before we went on the air?
I was gonna say I heard today we were talking about the you talking about the national championship game. Of course, Mike's gloating over his Alabama team there, but I heard that the Notre Dame coach interviewed for the Philadelphia Eagles head coaching position Tuesday.
I heard that also.
I mean, I can see where they would want him after that debacle Monday night.
Well, you know, take one of those jobs. I'm not an NFL coach or college coach, but, you know, before I step in somewhere, I have to have me a quarterback in place somewhere.
You ain't kidding.
I mean, that's the – you can have it all. If you don't have that, you got nothing, man.
Nope. You got to have something to build around. They said that the defensive coordinator in Atlanta, they said whenever Atlanta loses, whether it's this week, next week, or the Super Bowl, they said that that defensive coordinator Atlanta got this year may be in line for one of these head coaching jobs.
You know they asked a man in Jacksonville today.
Yeah, I heard that.
Okay, I'm back, guys. I had written his number down wrong, so that's why. But, hey, we got a commercial in anyway, so.
Two or three of them.
Miller.
Jody.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Michael Norris, Bobby Simmons, and Jerry Oates. How are you? Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium.
Thank you.
We're just sitting here celebrating Mr. Dromo, telling Bill Dromo stories and laughing. I'm sure you've got one or two to tell.
Oh, yeah, I guess I was more involved with Bill professionally than I was socially and so on. And over the years, I don't know how many times I wrestled him, but you know, when I know Bill was a fierce competitor, and when you wrestled in the era that we wrestled in, to be successful you had to be a fierce competitor, and you know, and sometimes that wasn't the best stomping grounds, shall we say. To develop personal relationships. However,
right.
What it did do is it helped develop a healthy respect, which I had a tremendous amount of respect for Bill and Bill's ability and his competitive nature. And that respect has carried on long after we retired, both of us retired from the ring. But I have nothing but good things to say about Bill and his ability. You know, Bill was kind of he was one of those guys that never really, he went out on the road a little, but not to the extent that most of us guys did. He just kind of stayed around the Georgia area. He went to Florida a couple of times and he was in the Carolinas for a while, I guess, but basically he just stayed around Georgia, and maybe that's why he wasn't really known that well nationally, but that certainly didn't diminish his ability, and it certainly didn't diminish my respect for him and his ability.
I think he got most of his traveling out early in his career. Once he hit Georgia, he pretty much homesteaded. Of course, he met and married Karen in 1962, and she was living in Atlanta at that time too. So they pretty much made their home here and raised their kids here. And we were talking before we got you on the line. He was such an avid hunter and fisherman and everything that he was able to work his own schedule, and he mainly worked for Fred Ward in Georgia, and was well taken care of and made good money, and the trips were relatively short, so he had everything he needed and everything he wanted, so there was no need for him to go anywhere else, I guess, in his eyes.
Well, you know, when you're satisfied with what you got and everything, then there isn't any reason to venture out into the unknown, because there's no guarantees out there either.
That's true.
For sure. You gotta take a chance and play it as it lays. But
I guess you mainly worked with him. With you and Tom worked. I guess he and Armstrong mainly.
No, I had an awful lot of single matches with Bill, especially down around the Columbus area. Yeah, that was after Tom retired. And I can't begin to imagine how many matches I had with Bill. But there was a multitude of them, believe me. And Bill was one of those kind of guys, and it's ironic, too, because called the other day, shortly after I talked to you, I got a call from another friend of mine and was telling me that he had just talked to Dick Steinborn's son. And Dick Steinborn's son wanted to get a hold of me because Dickie is, I guess he's in the advanced stages of Alzheimer's now. And the kid's trying to do everything that he can to bring some sort of stability into his life and help him to see if he can, help his memory or, you know, and get guys that he was familiar with and so on to talk to him to see if he can help him out any. But he hadn't called yet. But anyway, we were all from that same era, Steinborn and Dromo and myself. Bob Armstrong was back in there and so on. And I don't know. To me, the era that we were in, that era of wrestling was the greatest era that wrestling has ever had, and it was certainly a competitive era, and not like the hippodrome that you see on TV today, and so on, because the guys actually had to go out there and dig for it. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Exactly. Well, Bobby, you and Jerry chime in.
Jerry, how you doing? This is Jerry Oates.
Who? Jerry who? How the hell are you?
I'm doing fine, Jody.
Good. I haven't talked to you in eons.
A long time.
Yeah. How's your brother?
Doing good. He's living in Macon.
Good. Tell him I said hey when you talk to him.
I will. So Dickie's not doing good, huh, Jody? I haven't talked to Dickie in a while.
Well, I haven't talked to him either, and I haven't talked to his son yet. His son hadn't called back yet, but from what I understand, he's not doing real well at all, no.
Yeah.
And I hate to hear that, Dickie was another one of those guys like Bill that I enjoyed going into the ring. When I knew that I was going to go into the ring and wrestle them and everything, I looked forward to it for several reasons. First of all, because I knew that win, lose, or draw, the match was going to be a quality match, and the people were going to be thoroughly entertained, because these guys never went out there and laid on their butt.
Everybody has matches that stick out in their mind, but the Augusta run that you and Dickie had will always stick out in my mind.
Yeah. Well, I think when people ask me what the highlights of my career have been and everything, I've got several. You know, and I guess the number one highlight would probably have to be becoming the youngest man to ever wrestle in a main event in Madison Square Garden back in 1958 when I was 19. And then the next highlight would have to be the 2 hour and 46 minute match that Steinborn and I had in Augusta.
I know. I was sitting right there watching it.
Yeah.
And you know what? And y'all held the people. I mean, hard to believe this day and time.
Well, you know, nobody was quite sure what the reaction of the people were going to be when they called it at the curfew, at the midnight curfew at 1 minute after 12, when Manderson got in the ring and told him that he had to stop the match because of the curfew and everything, because we hadn't had any falls, you know. And believe it or not, well, you were there, you saw it. We got both of us got a standing ovation. And the people sit there and knew that that they were seeing history made as far as Augusta was concerned, certainly, because that's the longest match on record ever in the history of wrestling in Augusta. And they appreciated the hard work and the effort that took place.
Well, it was it's too bad that wasn't filmed.
Yeah.
I mean, for real. I mean, really.
Well, I certainly hate to hear that about Dickie. He did, probably 10 or 12 shows with us last year. In fact, Jody, you know Dickie as well as we all do. He became our booker and unofficial producer. He was calling me, telling me what he wanted to talk about and how I was going to ask him this question. He was booking our whole show for us, but I hate to hear that about him. He had a lot of plans he was working on the last time I talked to him.
Yeah.
He was writing a stage play that he had talked to some theater up there in Richmond, and they were going to stage for him. I certainly hate to hear about that.
Yeah. And like I say, I don't know how advanced it was, and the guy that called me is a hell of a nice guy, but he might be a little bit of an alarmist and everything. You know, Dickie may not be as bad off, which I'm praying that he's not, but he may not be as bad off as Dale thinks he is.
Well, let's hope not. Let's hope not. Now, was Georgia the only place you ever crossed paths with Steinborn? I mean, not Steinborn, Dromo, or were there other places that you guys crossed paths?
Florida. I crossed paths with him a couple times in Florida, and maybe the Carolinas too once. But he didn't stay long in the Carolinas. I think the trip was too long.
He was. I know he worked up. East Tennessee quite a bit, but I think that was before you really didn't go into Tennessee until Florida opened up Knoxville, did you?
Right.
Right, so I think he was there ahead of your time in East Tennessee. He worked mainly for John Kazana and Thornton, Harry Thornton.
Yeah. Yeah, those were good old days, though, you know, I mean... When I think about them, I have some very fond memories of them. Because I have a lot of fond memories of the business, in general. Because, like I say, during my our era was different than the era of today. The guys are different. The work is different. Much different. And we took great pride in our in-ring performances. You know, and in this day and age, all I see is a bunch of it's like a Hollywood hippodrome circus.
Yeah, and that's, I agree with you, and I work for the circus. So.
I'd just like to ask Jody one thing, and you know, everybody thinks their era was the best, you know, but. I think, not because I was in that era, but I'm talking about talent-wise, I think it was the best.
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind. You know, and of course, the young guys of today and the superstars of today, they're going to say that their era is the best and so on. But I will guarantee you, there isn't one guy in the business today, not one, not one babyface in the business today that could do what Dick Steinborn can do.
Oh.
There isn't. There are no Dick Steinborns today. You know, there are no more Bill Dromos today. You know, Bill was a big, barrel-chested, robust guy and everything, but he could move his ass off in that ring. And he didn't slack off or shy off of anybody or anything.
No, he
didn't.
You know,
and these guys today and everything, they look more like ballet dancers and gymnastic performers than they do wrestlers.
I mean, you know, just like, you know, I had the pleasure of working with you and Tom and tag partners with Bill. And I mean, it was just the way all of that era worked. I mean, it was solid workers. I mean, not just limp-wristed guys. I mean, I'm talking about solid. It was.
Well, this is what, you know, this goes back to what I was saying before. I think all the guys that were involved in the business back in our era and everything were far more conscientious about their in-ring performances than the guys are today.
I think,
of course, they're going to do, you know, the guys today, they're going to go out there and they're going to do what Vince wants them to do. If Vince wants them to go out there and make clowns and idiots out of themselves and everything, that's what they're going to do because he's writing the checks.
Right. I think back,
you know, and
back
let's face
in,
it, he's the only, he's got the only game in town, so... You know, if you want to be in the wrestling business and everything, you're going to do what the man say do.
Well, that's it in a nutshell.
You know, it's an unfortunate situation, you know, that we had three or four or five morons that knew doodly squat about the business and everything, but when they got in a position of power, they killed off the goose that could have laid the golden egg, and that was WCW with Ted Turner.
Yeah,
thank you.
Exactly.
But, and I'm looking at one of them right now. I'm sitting in the dining room, but I'm looking out through the other room where my wife's got the TV on and everything, and one of the guys that I trained was just on there, and she left it on, and now I see Hulk Hogan's on there. And Hogan was one of the, I call him the Murder Squad. He was one of a member of the Murder Squad that killed WCW.
That's very true. That is very true. Well, the back in our era, I mean, we were taught to, you know, make it look as real as possible. And they're not concerned about that anymore. They don't care that anybody believes what goes on in the ring. Or they, you know. And I think that's the thing. You left out a name. You were naming all those names that there's no longer anybody like, and you left out one name, and that would be Jody Hamilton. There was, you know, there's not. I mean, yeah, you were heel most of your career, but you know you weren't punch kick. You were a wrestling heel, and you know, very very intelligent and calm and sedate on your interviews and everything, very straightforward and very believable. Everything you did was believable. And that's the lost part of it right there.
I appreciate that. And like I said, it was because I took a great deal of pride in my in-ring performance. You know, I never wanted anybody, when my match was over and everything, I never wanted to be on the way back to the dressing room and have somebody say, "Ah, that was all BS," you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Jody, this is Bobby.
Hey, Bobby.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, sir. And you?
I'm good. I can attest to one thing. Those pinches to the back of my arms were real. My arms stayed black and blue from my shoulders to my elbows. Because every time I got close to him, he'd get just enough skin to pinch, and it would light you up.
Well, you know, I have those same marks every time I get in the ring with Jody.
I understand. People go, "Why are they jumping like that?"
Jody used to beat me to death.
You know, I'll tell you something. You were talking, Michael, about the matches that Jody had. I'll tell you, as a fan growing up, and then my heroes becoming the people that I worked with. You don't know what it's like to stand in the corner of the ring and watch this big rascal with a mask on run across the ring and do a flying head scissors. or stand flat-footed and throw a drop kick and hit a guy in the chin. and you stand there and you go, wow, how'd he do that? You know, I mean, it was just
Jody,
that era that he's talking about. I came along, I guess, toward the end of it. I started in 72, and I just 72, 73, and I just, you know, I was so fortunate to be there and to watch these guys. And you know, people will say, you know, what's your favorite memory or what's this or what's that? And I tell people, we performed before the same people basically every week. Every week it was the same people in the same towns on the front row. And all of these people thought they knew what we were doing, or especially the guys, what the guys were doing. I was just trying to stay out of the way. But they were never quite sure. That's a credit to our profession and to the guys that worked, and just, you know, they never had a clue. They thought they did, but they wasn't sure. Because as soon as they'd tell you they knew what was going on, they'd say, I was there the night Dick Stein born and the assassin like killed each other because they got mad at each other.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. You know, you could go down to 14th and Peachtree Street and randomly interview people. And if you would have done this 25 years ago, and you would ask them at random what their opinion of professional wrestling is, they'd say, well, it's fake, it's fixed, it's prearranged, and so on. But sometimes they really get mad at each other and they throw the script away. Now, you go back to the same corner, 14th at Peachtree nowadays, and you ask the same question of wrestling fans or of people in general, what their candid opinion of professional wrestling is, they'll just tell you it's all show business, it's fake, it's fixed, it's prearranged, da-da-da-da-da. But they never preface it by saying, however, sometimes they do get mad and throw away the script.
Yep.
Right.
That's the difference.
Exactly.
Yep. Very well put.
Exactly.
You know, and I've had my, certainly had my disagreements with McMahon and so on, you know, and let's face it, he's all about power and everything, and he wants to completely control you and every aspect of your life and this and that and so on and so forth, and you know, for my entire life, nobody ever controlled me, and I'm too damn old and was too old at the time when I started working for Vince McMahon and running the training center for him and everything. I was too old to conform then, so if I never let anybody control me before then, I sure as hell wasn't going to start then, and let Vince do it, you know. And that's why they closed the center down. So it wasn't because we weren't doing a good job, because I put a lot of people in the WWE, a lot of people that are still up there, and some of them are big stars.
I was getting talent from you.
Yeah,
you sent some unbelievable boys over to me, Jody.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's, I don't know, I get kind of wound up, I guess, because wrestling has been my life. I've been in the wrestling business since I was 17 years old, you know, and I love the business. I have always loved the business. I still love the business, but I love the business as I know the business, not
right.
As Vince presents the,
yep.
the business. You know, because to me, that's not the wrestling that I know. What I see on TV and all the garbage, I call it garbage, that they put on TV and everything, that's not what I grew up in. That's not the business that I grew up in. You know, and if they want to change the business, they can go ahead and change the business. But they're going to damn sure change it without me.
Thank you.
You are preaching to the choir, sir. Well, let me ask you, Jody, who hits you harder, Dromo or Rocket Monroe?
Ooh, boy, that's about a toss up there. I told a goddamn Rocket Monroe one night after a match I had with him in Griffin, at the old rodeo
Palace.
Arena. Yeah, Sports Palace. Told him, I said, let me tell you something. I've had easier street fights than this. And, boy, he had some clubby old hands. Oh, man.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
What a guy, though.
Yes, he was. That's another one we all miss. Oh, Lord, he was so fun. He was so fun.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, there's been a lot of them. A lot of them gone down in the last couple of years, boy, I tell you. A lot of guys that I knew well.
And it's a shame. We did our the last show we did in 2012. We always do our last show. We do a bit of a memorial for all the people that we lost from the business that particular year.
Yeah.
And it always seems to happen that we usually lose one or two more after we do the show. We lost five, including Bill, of course.
Yeah.
In the last few weeks and everything, and it grows smaller every day.
Seems that way, doesn't it?
Yes, sir.
Pretty soon I'm going to be the only one left. Oh, God. I got to I'm looking for the paper here. I can't find the doggone thing. But anyway, Scott Teal called me the other day, wanted to know about the book. But anyway, there's a guy named Tony Villano, and he has the state-chartered Wrestling Hall of Fame up in Amsterdam, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going up there in, let's see, when is it, April? Yeah, April, I think it is. And they inducted me into their Hall of Fame up there, too. So I'm going to go up there for the induction.
Yes. Well, that's great.
And
fantastic.
Anyway, Scott Teal called me and told me, he said, this is really a big thing, and it's really a legitimate thing. It's a state-chartered Hall of Fame, you know, and Vince has nothing to do with it, and it's driving Vince crazy.
Right.
Vince has tried to call him out, or try to buy him out, I should say, three or four times, and the guy that is sponsoring it and everything is a very, very successful businessman, and he's probably got as much money as Vince, so he told Vince to kiss off, you know. And Vince can't stand that, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Jody, I'm going to get Bob Armstrong on the line. I would love if you're able to stay on with us, and but if you can, I understand. We're going to have you on just to have a show for yourself. We would love to have you on.
Well, yeah, just you know how to get a hold of me. Get a hold of me, and we'll set it up, you know.
Well,
be happy
good.
To do it. Because I'm going to, I got some people here, and I'm going to have to get off the line. When,
have you got 2 hours worth of stories to do a show by yourself?
Yeah. Hell, if not, I'll make them up.
He's got one match, 2 hours and 46 minutes, so you can.
Yeah. Yeah, I can. I described that match with me and Steinborn move from here. That'll take the time up.
Jody.
Well, thank you for doing the show with us, sir, and I will certainly get a hold of you in the coming weeks. We'll
All
bring
right.
something to have you on.
I with. Appreciate you inviting me on.
Thank
and,
you, sir.
Hello and goodbye to Oates, my man, and Bobby, and to you too.
Thank you,
and
sir.
And I haven't talked to Jerry and Bobby in so long. It was really a pleasure to be able to talk to them again. Anyway,
Great
you guys take
you.
Care of yourself.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you, sir.
Jody.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir.
That's a great guy, man.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I can tell that just by all the stories that Bobby tells about him.
Oh, geez. He's funny. He's funny, man. He probably kept me from getting healed.
Bobby.
Oh.
You know that?
Do what?
That was one tough man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Son, there's a guy that...
Well, I wrote...
There's a guy that came out of the balcony in Atlanta one night, decided to jump in a ring to help his, to help Tommy Siegler, and he probably wished he had never seen that masked man.
I mean, there's a lot of them.
Charlie was begging him, said, please let him go.
Well, let me try and get Bob on here. Hopefully we won't get another Magic Jack commercial. Maybe we won't dial Don Fargo's number.
Hello, we are not available now.
Oh, well.
Please leave your name and phone number after the beep. We will return your call.
Mike, I hate to tell you, you need a secretary.
I need something, that's for sure.
You know, a producer that lines this stuff up as we...
I need Steinborn back booking the show for us.
Oh.
I hope that's not... altogether true about Dickie. I'd hate that. Man, that's a wealth of information that's stored in there.
I mean, he had so many things he was working on.
He never got it out. That's a sad thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'll try Bob back here and say we've had a caller from Nashville that's been holding on the entire show, so I'm going to get them on the line with us real quick, see if they've got any questions or comments. Caller from Nashville, you're on the air. Go ahead. Hello?
Hello?
Let me guess. This is Chicken Hat.
Yes, this is him. I've been listening the whole time, at least since 7 o'clock, Central Time, of course.
Well, how are you doing?
Fine, just dandy.
Well, good. Good. So, why haven't they given you your own show yet? You need to talk to Rich about this.
I don't know.
Well, did you ever have the opportunity to see Mr. Drummo work, or do you have any memories of him at all?
No, I really don't know him that well. I believe he was before my time. See, I've only been a wrestling fan since 1985.
Yeah, he was slightly ahead of you. I think Bill's last run was in, I know he worked for Ron Fuller down in Mobile in 79. He was still doing, you know, television shows periodically in Georgia in 80 and 81, which is when I saw him. I think he did one last run for Jerry Jarrett. In late 81 or 82 is a Super Destroyer, and I think that was when he wound it up, was after that. So, yeah, he was slightly ahead of your time. But anyway, let me put you back on hold, and let me see if I can get another caller on the line. I'll try Bob Armstrong again. Hold on. Make sure I wrote Bob's number down right. Sometimes I can't read my own handwriting. I do it left-handed while I'm trying to do something else. Yeah, I got it. What was that? Somebody hang up on us?
No, I think you've tapped into every phone. Something.
Yeah, I think you got that Magic Jack again.
Maybe it's why the towers in Savannah are down, 16 of them.
Yeah, if we have any first-time listeners out there, I think we should make the statement that this is pretty normal for us. We do this every week, so don't think we're having a bad week or nothing.
I don't know. This is pretty close.
Well, I don't know what's happening here. There we go. Thank you.
Hello, we are not available now. Please leave your name and phone number after the beep. We will return your call.
You may be booked tonight somewhere.
Could be.
If you're not working tonight, give us a call here at Beast State Pandemonium. The call-in number is 347-324-5735. Thanks. Okay. Well, we'll see what happens.
I know this is Bill Dromo night, but I got to tell you a Jody story, Jerry. You'll like this. We were working for Ann, and you know Zulu was working for us. And he broke his wrist, so they had him in a cast. So they were having him go to all the towns just to make an appearance. So I'm riding with Jody, and he's riding with us. We're going to Savannah. And Jody always drove those big 98s. So me and Jody's in the front seat. Zulu's in the back seat. We're going down, and we stopped at Soberton and ate. We got back on the road, and, you know, that was when we had that, you know, you had that, 100 miles of two-lane road, that horrible trip through all those little downs. And Zulu, after he had ate, got sleepy, and he laid down in the back seat. And he curled his knees up, and he turned with his face toward the back of the car, and his feet was hanging off the seat. And Jody seen him. So Jody let him get asleep. He looked over at me, and he gave me the high sign to buckle my seatbelt. You know, this was before everybody wore them, and I buckled it, and he buckled his. And he reached over, and he left the front seat, had them electric seats. He left them seats all the way up, just as far as he could.
I know where this is going.
Son, he hollered, "Oh, my God, a deer," and he hit the brakes. Zulu come off that back seat, and he hit the front seat. He come off so hard, and he fell in the floorboard, and when he did, Jody hit that electric seat and tooled it right over back.
No, he didn't.
Got him. He couldn't get him in the back floorboard, and he couldn't get up. Man, that deer, said, I almost hit that deer.
Poor Zulu, you guys shouldn't have picked on him so much.
Oh, jeez.
Running crazy, didn't it?
Listen, that poor guy, he didn't have a clue.
Whatever happened to him?
Somebody said he was driving a cab or something.
Yeah, last I heard he was in San Francisco driving a cab, but that's been 15, 20 years ago.
He should have worked with Romo.
Oh, jeez. The last time I saw him was the day he pulled the gun on Ole. And Ole backed him right out of the building. He was backing, had a gun pointed at Ole, and Ole was walking toward him, and he was backing up. And he backed all the way out of the sports arena and all the way down the street and got in his car. And as he was leaving, he was waving the pistol outside the car going, "I'm going to shoot you," as he drove off.
Well, I wouldn't
just have a bullet in it.
That's the last time I saw him.
What a mess. I've got one more caller here. I'm going to try and get on the line. Caller from Alabama, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Hey, Dennis Mitchell. How y'all doing tonight?
All right. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I have a question to ask Mike. You remember when Bob Armstrong was a bad guy in Southeastern Wrestling? I'm not sure if he was there or you left to go to Georgia or not.
I was already living in Atlanta by that time. I had gotten out of the business and was living in Atlanta. I've seen videotape of it, yes.
Yeah, that woman that Bob would talk about when he grew his mustache and all, named Fannie Mae, was that a real person?
Well, yeah. No.
Was that a real
person? In fact, no, it wasn't. It was a name he made up. In fact, Bob did our show, what was it, guys, six, 8 months ago?
Yep.
Yeah.
Back last spring, I guess. And I asked him about Fannie Mae because he said he was working in Mobile one night, and there was a lady. Mobile had a lot of the same people would come every week, and there was a lady there that was very well dressed that had never been there before. Nobody had ever didn't recognize her. So the fans took it upon themselves that was Fannie Mae Titwiler. And Bob's working the match, and the fans are starting to surround this lady. She's sitting out in the audience trying to mind her own business, and these fans are are surrounding this lady, and Bob catches it out of the corner of his eye. And he said he stopped the match and had to get on the house microphone and tell people that Fannie Mae Titwiler was not there with him.
Man.
So they would leave this poor woman alone. But no,
man,
that was,
I tell you,
that was all made up.
I tell you, I just wondered, that's all. I was 14 years old when it would happen. You know, as a 14-year-old kid back in 82, I thought Bob went off the deep end when he grew a mustache. I thought the man was having a midlife crisis, you know, especially when he slapped Charlie Platt in the face that time. That's something I'll never forget as long as I live. And all that. That's amazing. And one other thing, guys, before I let y'all guys go, I'll listen to y'all off the air. If Jody Hamilton was wrestling CM Punk right now, how many minutes in the ring do you think CM would last with Jody? Thank you.
As long as Jody wanted it to
be. I was going to say, as long as Jody wanted to play with him. I mean, that's you know, that's
very
as
true.
Honest an answer as I could give.
Very true. Well, Dennis, I appreciate you calling in. He dropped off. I guess he's listening on his computer as well. But appreciate you calling in. Well, since we're not hearing from Bob, I want to call our last guest, and hopefully me and the switchboard get along long enough and I can get Danny Miller on the line with us.
Did you talk to Danny today, Michael?
Yes, I talked to Danny
today.
They
made it home, I was wondering.
They made it home okay, and everything is doing well. In fact, I spoke to both he and Karen. She answered the phone. I talked to her a little bit, and then she got him on the line with me. But
is Danny living in Florida?
Tampa. He's in Tampa.
Hello.
Hello.
Danny.
Yes.
Hey, it's Michael Norris, Jerry Oates, and Bobby Simmons. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Doing great. Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium. I called you a little earlier. Bob Armstrong was supposed to be with us, and I haven't been able to catch him. Knowing Bob, he's probably working somewhere tonight.
Uh-huh. Possibly.
I'm glad you made it home to Tampa okay.
Yeah, we did. We got home Monday night. We went up toward Gainesville, Georgia, Flowery Branch. My wife has a sister living up there, and we went up in the mountains to the big, I think it's the Icon Center up there. Had lunch up there. It was very good, beautiful place. And then down to Helen, and went through Helen and checked it all out. So we had a good trip in Georgia. A little cool for us, though, compared to Florida. We've got last few days 80 degrees down here.
Well, I know you're still recovering with your voice, so I won't press you into too much service, but basically we're just telling Bill Dromo stories and laughing and remembering our friend and everything. And I know you and he were very close. When did you first meet Bill?
Well, in 1960, I'd gone to Japan, and when I returned to Japan from Japan, I went back to the farm in Ohio and helped my dad for about 3 months with farm work. And then I went to Atlanta in the fall of 1960, and Bill was there wrestling, and his wife Karen was the girlfriend at that time. And they introduced me to my wife, Karen, in 1960. I believe it was about September of 60. And 3 months later, my wife and I married, and we've been married 52 years now.
So, congratulations. Bill and Karen were married 52 years as well.
Yeah, they married about 6 months after Karen and I did, yes. And my wife was a friend of Karen's when she came from Germany. She lived there in Smyrna, where Karen lived at the time. and that's how Karen and my wife met. And my wife worked down at the Dinkler Hotel in Atlanta, and Bill introduced us on a blind date, and I guess it worked out all right. We were still together.
That's the high spot of this whole thing, is Danny still talked to Bill even though he introduced him. That's a good thing, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. That's like going to hunt for the bear, right, Bobby?
Yes.
Like find one. I want to thank you for that service you gave for Bill. That was excellent.
Thank you, Danny.
Very personal, and my wife made comment with Karen today when she talked to her on the phone that she expressed her approval of the job you did for Bill.
Thank you very much.
Service there, yeah. And it was a good friend of mine. As you know, in wrestling, I was wrestling for 22 years, up and down over Japan, Australia, South America, Argentina, North Korea, or South Korea, and all over Canada. And ran into Bill several different places. One was in Charlotte in the 80s, I believe it was. And we were there for quite a while. And then Bill moved back to Atlanta and kind of based there most of his wrestling career. Whereas my wife and I always, wherever I went, about be away for a month or two and then bring the family along and stay as long as I could in different places. One of the high spots was, in Calgary in 1957-58, going way back now. That's just a couple of years in wrestling at that time. Brother Bill was out there, and Ed broke his ankle, and I was in Montreal making, I believe, $125 a week, working probably 5-6 times a week. So I was anxious to go to Calgary. It was really the first break I had with Stu Hart, and it was a pretty neat remembrance for me, the Calgary Stampede and that area of wrestling.
I happened to find, I was messing around on YouTube yesterday and happened to find a match that had to have been late 50s from Buffalo with you and Don Eagle working together.
Yeah, I gave that, it's on video. It's
right.
It's been on the video. In fact, Don Eagle's relative was here about maybe 2-3 years ago and came to the house with a crew that did a documentary on him, on Don, and knew I was part of the experience with Don there in Buffalo, New York, and Toronto and that area, and came to the house and did that. And that was one of the clips that I furnished to him that he could put together for his grandkids. That's how their relative was in the wrestling business. And that was back in Buffalo in about 1957, I believe, before I went to Calgary.
That was a hot territory up there.
Yeah, it was between Toronto and Buffalo. It was very good for us. Of course, we came across as far as Cleveland and Akron, too. And then all over the Toronto area, Hamilton was very good, where George and Sandy Scott are from. And Chris and John Tolis from there also.
Right.
Was good wrestling territory at that time. Of course, they had Whipper Billy Watson, and he was one of the Canadian champions at that time. Yes, you said earlier that you would have Karen and Tanya on tonight also.
Yes, Karen had mentioned I had let them know that we were doing the show, And she told her I would love for them to be on if they felt up to it. So she messaged me today and gave me the phone number that she would be calling in on so I could put them on. She said she would have Karen with her, but so far they have not called in. They may be listening and just haven't called in yet. So
okay.
Hopefully they will. So
I hope they do, yeah. So you say who else do you have there with you now?
Bobby Simmons, myself, and Jerry Oates.
Jerry Oates, yeah, okay.
I hadn't seen.
Anybody recognizes your name, Jerry?
I hadn't seen Danny Miller in 72. That's why he don't remember.
Yeah, well, you know, in wrestling, you know, you work all over all the years and different areas, different territories, and all the different wrestlers that you're in and out of the ring with, travel with perhaps sometimes. And Bill Dromo was one of maybe a handful of wrestlers that I would invite into my home as a personal guest. Can't say that about too many, believe me. Wahoo McDaniels was another. Wahoo was a good friend. And every time we went to Atlanta, we always connected up with Bill and Karen, and they always had us put up at their home. And Karen's a fabulous cook, and being German, she knows how to cook all the good German food that my wife and I love, and we appreciate that from her. And she has a neat family, Kelly and Anya and Denise and all the grandkids. She's a busy woman, believe me, with all the canning she does. Always sends a bunch of jars of vegetables and fruits and stuff that she's canned down here to Florida with us. And I have a grandson that loves her canned tomatoes, pickled tomatoes, and her pickles that she puts up. He always wants to know when we're going to Georgia so he can have some stuff to eat.
And we've all talked about Bill and his fishing and hunting. Were you an avid sportsman like Bill to do all that stuff?
No, but he hinted many times, I ought to do this and I ought to do that. But I was never into that. Born and raised on a farm there in northern Ohio. When we went rabbit hunting, that was with a collie dog and the bare hands. To go up the fence rows or into the woods to a brush pile there and get the dog on one side and you on the other side. And finally, you'd end up with a rabbit or two. And as far as using a gun or a bow and arrow or anything like that, no, that wasn't part of our growing up. We never were allowed to use those guns and stuff, although we had them there. The only time I saw a gun used, them, we killed a hog or a beef for putting a cellar for winter food.
And of course, your brother became a veterinarian.
Yeah, Bill, we well raised there on the farm, you know. I'm talking back in 1940s, early 40s and 45, at the end of the World War, Second World War. We had about 6 foot of snow, and we got out of school December 19th, and we didn't go back to school until the first part of March of the next year because we were snowed in out in the country. No way to get out. So if you wanted to go to town, you got on top of the snow and the ice, and you walked straight shot to town because everything was under the snow. No fence rows, no nothing. Just the telephone poles were sticking out of the ground at that time and the trees.
Jeez.
Outside of that, it was clear sailing. Of course, it was 15 below zero, so there weren't many trips to town back in those days.
I see why you live in Florida now.
That's why I enjoy Florida, yes. I have two brothers up there in Fremont, but No, I go up once in a while and visit. I spend a week and I'm ready to come back home.
Yeah, I bib Les Thatcher all the time because, of course, he lives in Cincinnati, and that's too cold for me.
Yeah,
I travel
yeah.
to the Northeast with my job, but at least it's in the summertime, so it's not cold. I never see ice or snow.
Uh-huh.
Thus far, I've been lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All you have to do is mention snow in Atlanta. It doesn't even have to snow. If you just mention it on TV, we'll shut down for about a week, 10 days up here.
I remember in Atlanta in 1960 when I was there, they had an ice storm. And, boy, you couldn't do anything. Everything had a couple inches of ice on it, the highways, the streets. You couldn't do anything. It was a bad omen there. Of course, back in the good old days like that, you had the Hell Supper Club. You could buy your six-pack of beer at the store, then get a brown paper bag, put it in there, take it into Hell Supper Club and drink your beer and dance all night. You know, I'm talking about 50 years ago, so I was able to dance then. Now I don't think I could. But
most places won't let you bring your own in.
Yeah, we had our good times back then. Yeah, yeah. I remember back in the 70s, I believe it was, I went to Japan and I met, was it Jerry? You could ask him. I met in Los Angeles.
Yes.
On our way to Japan. And when we got over there, I told Jerry, he asked me about the Japanese wrestlers. I said, you only get what you take. And I said, if you don't take it, they're not going to give it to you. So that's just the way it was, too.
Yeah, I met Bill in L.A., and then we went on over. And Kenny J was over there. He was from Minneapolis.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We had a six-man tag match, right? So Kenny and I turned around and left Bill in the ring, and he turned around. We're already on the apron. He crisscrossed and knocked both of us out in the audience.
I still remember
that. I'm telling you, man, he'd like to kill both of us.
And
we never did that again.
It, right.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
My brother
yeah,
Ted
Bill,
said,
Bill
hey, you hello.
I love to be outdoors and do the turkey hunting, the hog hunting, and the deer. Yeah, he loved that, and fishing, too. And I guess that we'd live closer in the same area for a longer period of time. I might have got into that with him, but it didn't work out that way.
You might have gotten into it whether you wanted to or not. Bobby can tell you that story.
I was just fixing to say, think about what you're saying there. Did you really want to be in the woods with him with a loaded gun in his hand? I mean, yeah. Oh.
Well, he never got that opportunity with me, Bobby.
Oh. You know, you were talking, you know, something you said there I think is very profound, and we've talked about this on this show before. You said out of all the people you went and you knew and you met and you saw, only about six would you actually invite into your home. We throw
right.
the word friend around very loosely in the English language.
Yeah.
The fact is we have a lot of acquaintances, but we have very few friends.
Yeah,
and I am so proud Bill Dromo was my friend.
Yeah,
I mean, he was such a, if normal people had done the things to each other that me and him did to each other over 40 years, you know, there would have been a killing or at least a major falling out. But,
yeah.
You know, I mean, he was so funny. I mean, he's hit me so hard I thought the ring fell in on me. You know, but it's like I tell people, everything I did, everything I got, I deserved.
And that's when I look him straight in the eye. I said, is that all the harder you can hit? You know?
I might have said that if I'd had any breath in me, but I couldn't speak.
Yeah. One thing about Bill, if you ever wanted an opinion from somebody, all you had to do was ask Bill Drummond for one, and he would give it to you. You might not like what he said, but he'd darn sure give it to you.
He always knew where you stood with him. There was never any
That's
gray
correct.
Area.
That's correct. Yeah.
Well, Danny, you had an advantage that very few people had. You grew up with Big Bill Miller as your brother, so I'm sure you took a few punches growing up.
Yes, yeah. When I first started in 1955, I had mat burns on my cheekbones, on my shoulders, top of my shoulders, on my elbows, on my knees, and some of them down on my butt from getting slid across the ring mat with some of the pros that was there around Columbus, Ohio at that time. And that was kind of the old hard school knock program. They didn't want to see the young ones get too popular because then they might not be on the booking sheet.
Right. And, well, Jerry, you worked with Danny's brother, didn't you?
Yeah, in St. Louis. That's the only time I ever met
Gill Auditorium.
What a nice man he was.
Yeah, Bill was a good wrestler and a good sportsman to everybody, even though he was a big man.
He's a gentleman.
He always got along good with everybody. Good-natured person.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. My voice is about to give out here on me, I think.
Well, we appreciate you joining us, Danny, and we'll keep in touch with you when your voice is a little bit stronger. We'd love to have you on as a guest and have as a full show with you, or as much as your voice will hold out and do. But it's an honor to have you on here with us. I certainly appreciate it.
Okay, well, I enjoyed being here and talking up for my friend Bill Dromo, and God rest his soul.
Yes,
and,
sir.
I want to thank Bobby and Jerry for helping out, too, okay?
Thanks, Danny.
You,
we will
Danny.
See you in a few weeks.
Yes, sir. Okay. Take care.
Thank you, sir.
See you.
Right.
Have a good night.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, we've got a caller from Atlanta. It's not the number that Tanya gave me, so I don't think this is them, but I'm going to go ahead and get this caller on the line with us. Caller from
Hello?
Atlanta, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, it's me.
It is Tanya.
Tanya. Yeah.
You fooled me.
Tanya who?
Tanya me.
It's Jerry who, not Tanya.
Oh, excuse me.
Jerry who?
For those that don't know, this is Tanya Matthews. Tanya Dromo Matthews, one of Bill's lovely daughters of the three he had. And I'd have put you on when Danny was on because he was hoping to be able to speak to you, but his voice was about to give out on him, so I let him bail out on us. But I appreciate him doing this.
Oh yeah, like I said, I heard it, but my phone's messed up, so I had to call from another number.
Okay. Well, welcome to the show. I got as you know, I got Bobby and Jerry Oates with us, so. And we've had Jody Hamilton on with us and Gene Bennett. Haven't been able to connect with Bob Armstrong. We've decided he took a booking tonight instead.
Probably.
He's working at a high school in Gulf Breeze somewhere.
Well, there you go. I tried to get Mom to come, but she said she wasn't ready to do this. So
I can understand
okay.
that.
Yeah.
I understand that.
How is she doing this week?
She's just there.
Okay.
And she's still lost and wondering.
Okay.
That's a lonely place after 52 years.
I know it is.
Oh.
Is it just her and the puppy at home?
Oh, no. Our older sister's staying with her right now.
Oh, okay.
We'll all take turns.
Okay.
So. Yeah, Nick's crying for Dad.
Oh.
The puppy, you know. That
yeah.
was Daddy's buddy.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Tanya, tell us, what was it like growing up is the daughter of Big Bill Dromo. Did you guys have any problems with boyfriends afraid to come around the house or anything?
Oh, yeah, that was a no-no. We didn't have that because they were afraid.
I can imagine.
No. No, you were fine until they realized who he was, and then it wasn't happening. Really?
I can't imagine Bill Dromo being intimidating at all.
Oh, you had to synchronize your watch by his watch, not yours. It was like, what time is it? That Nookie said, my watch says, what does your watch say? Because mine's going to count. Midnight was the bewitching hour, and he meant 12 o'clock, not 1 minute after with the door shut.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But he was awesome.
He was a great person, I tell you.
Yeah, he had a heart of gold, would do anything for anybody. Wouldn't trade him for a thing.
No, I don't think any of us would.
We kind of talked about this, or I heard you guys talking about this the other day. Kind of relate the story that I heard somebody tell, I guess your mom was telling me, about when your dad was gone so much and he loaded you guys up and took you to Tennessee for a week or something.
Yeah. He was gone all the time, so he would take 1 week out of the year and he would load all three of us girls up so my mom could have time to herself. And he would go and wrestle and, you know, she would do her thing, and he would wrestle, and when he would leave us, you know, someone to watch us, but we knew when we heard the whistle, it was time to go. And he would whistle or have somebody tap us, and he would do that, you know, go sign. It was like, you get up and move it, I'm ready to go. So we learned real quick what that meant. So. And then when he would be gone all the time, when he'd come in, he'd be tired. And us three girls, he'd lay on the floor in front of the TV to watch TV. And we would get our hair breadths and all that. He'd probably die on me telling this. And we would brush his hair and put it ponytail holders and all that good stuff on him.
Yeah, he wouldn't want that out, I promise you that.
It'd be okay. He had fun.
Nobody would rip him about that now, would they?
No.
Only at their own peril.
He would just give you that grin. But yeah. Mm-hmm. My daughter's looking at me.
Well, I've told the girls this, and it's the truth. When we were, you know, I never met any of the girls till they were grown. Well, they're all grown and married and got their own families. But I heard all these stories, you know, he would tell me about the girls and what they were doing. And, you know, I really didn't think they existed. I thought it was just Bill's made-up family, you know. He was having something to talk about, but he was very proud of his family. He loved you girls, and you know that. But he would, you know, when we were running up and down the road, he would talk about things that was going on, you know, whether it be school or, you know, and as you got older, I would rib him about boyfriends. That was always an easy thing to get him stirred up. So,
well, I didn't have a boyfriend, but my two sisters did. I didn't have any. I was smart. So, but yeah, but he always kept our pictures in his visor. I mean, to this day, you go to his truck and he's got pictures
yep.
of his girls and all the grandkids. They were always put on the visor. So. But he'll be missed, no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
He's one of a kind.
That he was. Bobby, you didn't tell the story at the funeral, but I tell a story here about you working the Battle Royal with him.
Oh, we were in, I had to go to Athens. Somebody didn't somebody, it might have been Jody, might have been double booked or something. He had to go to Knoxville for Fuller or something. And they sent me to Athens under a mask. I think I borrowed one of Jody's outfits. Nick Patrick brought me one of Jody's outfits, and we worked a battle royal, and I knew, and he was in the ring with, and you know, I run from him. I stayed, you know, I kept my eye on him because I knew if he ever got his hands on me, he's going to kill me. And I just kept running from him. Well, he actually went out of the ring before I did, and I relaxed. But what I didn't know was he had worked out with somebody else that as soon as he went out to lock up with me and push me back into a corner.
And I
backed up in the corner, and what he did, he went about halfway up the aisle, and he did a U-turn, and he came back, and he jumped up on the apron, and when they pushed me back into the corner, he hit me right between my shoulder blades from behind.
Nice.
And he extended that big long right arm of his up to, you know, it was almost to the ceiling. And when he hit me, I mean, it knocked, honest to goodness, I thought the ring pole fell. I hit the mat, and I turned around, and he looked at me, and he just laughed. Never said anything. He just laughed. And he jumped down, and he walked off. Yeah, he just walked off. You know, but like I say, well, they were talking about Rocket and him. Rocket hit him one night in Atlanta. I forget what the deal was, but Rocket hit him in the back. And Bill says, "I'll get you." Well, Rocket left the territory and went to Tennessee. And he had been gone a few weeks. And Bill left and went to Tennessee. Now, this is Rocket telling me the story. Rocket said he was standing on a stage at the Batwell Auditorium in Birmingham. And he said he's standing there watching a match, minding his own business, and he did not know Bill was there. And he said Bill hit him so hard that it knocked him completely off the stage. He jumped off the stage when he got hit. And he said he hit the ground, and he said he was ready to fight because he thought somebody had hit him with a chair or something. He said he turned around. He said Bill was standing on the stage laughing at him, said, "Hey, I told you I'd get you," and he walked off. So, you know, it was... Everything we got, we deserved. We gave as good as we got. And
Wow. But you never snuck up on him, did you?
No, of course not.
I did one time. One time only. He was at home doing laundry, and I snuck up behind him. And about to got my clock cleaned. he was in the laundry room, and it was a dark hallway. And I kept behind him, and I thought he heard me, and he didn't hear me. And he pulled his fist back, and he was like, "Oh, it's just me." He said, "Girl, don't you ever come behind me like that again." I said, "Yes, sir." Learned real quick.
Did he ever had allowed you girls to come to the matches and watch him work on you?
Oh, yeah. We used to go with him, what was it, the Bell City Auditorium? Somewhere
in
Atlanta.
Well, the City Auditorium in Atlanta, and the Bell was in Augusta.
Yeah,
both of them, and then also at Civic Center. He would go, and he'd let us stay up there for a little while to see his friends or work or whatever, but he knew when it was time to go. There was no asking to stay longer to see something else. And it was time to go. It was time to go. And that was made clear before we ever got to go. It's like, "Girls, now when so-and-so comes and gets you or you hear me whistle," he said, "don't ask to stay." He said, "'cause I'm ready to go." I was like, "Yes, sir." And then the times when a few times he'd come home and his hand would be split open or something. Or there were times he would get paralyzed or something in the back and couldn't walk. And he would blow the horn, and that was my sign for me and my mom to go get him and drag him out of the truck and me to adjust his back. But he got to where he couldn't walk. So since I was the bigger of the three girls, that was my duty. So butterfly to many of his heads and many times his hands.
Now, did he ever smarten you guys up as far as what the business was actually about?
Oh, no, he didn't talk about it.
I didn't think so.
That was work, and work stayed at work. So you didn't question him. It was like, okay. So that was it.
I know we're getting. I know we only got about 10 minutes left, and this is kind of going off the graph here of what we've been talking about. But I just think it's something. People that didn't know him didn't really know how tough he was, and I think this kind of shows you not only how tough he was, but how the good Lord blessed his life. Kind of tell the people that might be listening about the night that he actually had when the aorta ruptured.
It was, I'd say, 16 years ago. And we were home. It was December the 15th. And we were at home, and he never went to sleep. He never took a nap. When he was up. And my mom had cooked supper. And he was downstairs, and we were upstairs, and she hollered, "Bill, it's time to eat," and he didn't answer, so she went downstairs and she hollered for me, and I went down there, and he's like, "I just don't feel good. I just want to lay down." And it was like, "No, you need to get up." Well, he didn't look really good, and we told him, I said, "You got two options. Mom can take you to the hospital, or we can call 911. Well, he insisted on Mama taking him, and she took him to the hospital, and they were going to keep him for observation. And while they were in observation, his blood pressure dropped to real low, like 50-something over 32. He screamed, and doctors come in there, and they told her, "If you want to save his life, just sign these papers. We got to go." And he was in surgery like 16 hours with a less than 2% chance of living. And they told my mom that he was a miracle of that year, that most people don't survive it. So we got lucky. Of course, he said when it was all said and done and he came home, I asked him, I said, "Do you remember anything?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "I went through to the light." He said, "My mama told me it wasn't my time for me to come back, that my job wasn't done here." And that was 16 years ago.
How many, and I heard, but I don't, how many pints of blood did they have to give him that night?
Lots. I had to fly it in.
Yeah.
It was
astronomical because the aorta, the main valve, the main artery to his heart ruptured.
Yeah.
And if he hadn't have been at the hospital, if he had stayed home, he'd have never got out of the house.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
I remember calling him at the hospital when he got well enough. I mean, when he got to where he could talk on the phone, I called him. And he said, I said, "The good Lord has left you here for a reason." And he said, "I know." He said, "I know." But he just,
yep.
I know Bill always enjoyed life. I think that experience made him appreciate life, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
He looked at things different after that.
Absolutely.
Ooh.
But he loved my mama and us girls and his grandbabies. And you couldn't ask for anybody better than what he was.
No, you couldn't.
I mean, he was all about my mama and us girls and the grandbabies. So.
Yep. He was a wonderful guy. And I tell you, he fought long and hard. And
Absolutely, because he was so tired. And my mom would call, and she called me, and she said, "Tanya, I don't think he's going to make it." And I said, "Mama, love him while you got him." I said, "Put him on the phone." And I said, "Daddy, you ready to check out?" He said, "Nope. I still got some fight in me. I ain't through fighting yet." And then a couple of days before he died, I talked to him. He said, "I'm getting tired." He said, "I don't know if I can do this anymore." And we told him, it's okay. If you decide you need to go, we promise we'll take care of Mama. So, and that was the last time I talked to him.
I know I speak for Bobby and Jerry, and I told your mom this the other night at the funeral home, that you guys have a very large extended family, and you've got people that love you that you don't even know about, probably, that
we'll be here for you guys, anything you need.
Well, I greatly appreciate it. I know my mama does. And Mr. Simmons, that was an awesome, awesome service you did for my daddy. He would have been so proud. I know he was smiling the whole time.
Thank you, baby. I was going to say Michael was speaking for other people. I didn't even like you, but since you said that, I'll have to tell you I love you.
You think?
Well, he will certainly be missed. He touched a lot of lives. Some
well,
of them harder
you.
Than others, but
he touched me in ways I could have done without.
But if he was your friend, you knew it.
Yep.
You could count on him. So, and he did what he said and meant when he did it. So.
Well, that's very true. Very true. Well, Tanya, I appreciate you joining us, and to Gene Bennett and Jody Hamilton and Danny Miller. Appreciate them being on with us as well. I'm sorry we couldn't get lined up right with Bob Armstrong, because I know he wanted to be on here when I talked to him yesterday. He was really looking forward to it, but having just lost Brad, I can understand if he changed his mind.
Absolutely. Losing a towel. Tough.
You've been there, haven't you?
Yes, sir.
Been there. But,
but she's with her grandfather now, and there,
yep.
She's keeping him busy.
Well, hopefully,
no doubt.
You can convince your mom to come to Mobile. One of these days, we're going to get Jerry Osteen there to show off his new knees.
That's right. They look good, too.
Well, I'll tell you what. Make him come, and I promise you I'll have my mother there.
Good deal.
I'm like my dad. If I make a promise, I keep it. He was a man of his word, and I'm a woman of mine.
Well, that's great, because we certainly love Karen and you girls, and you guys are always a joy to see in Mobile every year.
Oh, my daddy loved it.
And then, the casinos don't like to see your mom coming.
Or my dad.
let me throw one more story at you right quick. The first. I begged Bill to go to that reunion for 2 years. He always had some reason he couldn't go. He was working a security job. Got to work. Got to do this. Got to. I said, look, man. I said, I'm telling you, we're going to go down Friday. We'll be back Saturday night. One day. I said, I said, you'll love it. Blah blah. So he shows up at my house. He finally decides to go. He drove his old ratty rusted out pickup truck down to my house. And the first thing I tell him when he gets out, I said, you're not going to leave that thing sitting in my yard, are you? I said, the neighbors will talk. So he's hot because I'm talking about his truck, but my wife fixes him a cup of coffee to go, and he's all excited and loving on her. And me and him and Rocket went down together. So we're leaving the hotel, and we're going toward the reunion out there, and he's sitting in the front seat, and Rocket's in the back, and I'm driving, and we're going down the road. And all of a sudden, he goes, my God, Bobby, look, and he grabbed the steering wheel, and he just shoved it to the left, and we went across three lanes of traffic into a gas station. I mean, he didn't look to see if anything. I mean, he just turned in there. And I said, Bill, I said, what are you doing? He said, look, cigarettes are $10 a carton.
At Barclays?
I don't know what they were, but he come out with a double handful.
He used to give us a dollar to walk across the street to the store. We could get a candy bar and a pack of cigarettes. And we had to get there and get back in 15 minutes.
By his watch.
I told him before we got ready to come home, I told him, I said, look, man, I said, what time you get off on Friday nights? He said, about 6 o'clock. I said, I know Miss Karen gets home about that time. I said, call her and tell her next Friday night to get dressed up. I said, you get dressed up when you get home, take a shower. And I said, then y'all can go out. And he said, where are we going? I said, get in your truck and ride down here and get some of them $10 cigarettes.
That's when he quit smoking, when he had his aneurysm.
Yep.
Well,
Yep.
We are out of time. Tanya, again, I appreciate it. Know that how much your dad meant to all of us, and will continue to mean to all of us. As long as we've got stories to tell on him, he'll never be forgotten.
Amen.
Absolutely. Hey, well,
again, I appreciate it.
Thank you for calling, Tanya. I love you, darling.
I love you, too.
All righty.
Okay. Bye-bye. Right. Bye.
Thank you. Well, guys, next week our special guest will be Les Thatcher. I told him just because he wasn't doing the Wednesday night show, that didn't mean he was a free man. So he said he would do our show with us. So he will be our guest next Thursday, if I can figure out how to work the switchboard.
Reckon we can get him out of his shell?
No, I don't know.
Oh, man,
great.
You got to do something about this Magic Jack commercial. Bobby and I are not figured in.
Yeah.
All right. I'll cut you guys in on it.
Thank you very much.
Get something out of him.
All right, guys. Well, thank you very much as always, and
we'll
get together again next Thursday.
All right. Good night, guys.
Bye-bye. Take care.
We thank you for listening to the Tron Talk, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.